This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. And since last we spoke, and when I say we, I mean Jim and Jonathan, because I was not here with you, so it was not we. But since we last spoke, the royal we put out the top 150 draft prospects list. There's been a considerable amount of change at the top. Not so much in the names, a lot of the same names up there, but in a different order. Within the top 50, a lot of new names, a lot of guys that jumped from off of, they weren't on the list at all and are now in the top 50. Had a bunch of guys who made jumps up that were already on the top 100, but made jumps, big jumps. So we'll talk about all of that. And we'll talk to one of the guys who made a bit of a jump, but the top pitching prospect in the class now. In Arkansas lefty Hagen Smith, and we'll take a question from the mailbag. So Jim, Jonathan, excellent work on the top 150 prospects list. I think less involved in this list than any list that we've ever done. I think I was out for the duration, but
I'm sure though the draft 150 buzz in Paris was huge.
Oh man, everybody talking about it over there.
I was trying to see who had the most French sounding name in our, but I couldn't come up with the joke quickly enough, so I failed.
Well, Jimmy may have failed in finding one from this year, but last year, if you remember, the White Sox in the 12th round took Matthias Lacombe, who was French. Had come to Cochise College, a two-year school in Arizona. Has yet to throw a professional pitch, but there's a French, not just a French sounding name, an actual French name.
If we went 50 deep, which I know we're dying to do on our team lists, Matthias Lacombe would make the White Sox top 50.
There we go. I was roundly chastised by one Michael Clare, our international baseball guru, for not going to a baseball game while in Paris. All right, so let's dig into this top 150 a little bit, and let's start at the top. We have a new number one, which I don't think comes as a surprise to anyone who is following this draft class at all, but Charlie Condon of Georgia was number four on our initial preseason top 100 list. And as a little context, that list came out in December. So this is the first update since, you know, since the season began. And, you know, Charlie Condon has been outrageous this year. Started at number four, is now bumped up to number one. Travis Bezzana of Oregon State, second baseman there, a little international flavor here, from Australia. He was number three on the preseason list, is now number two. Jack Caglione of Florida. All of these guys, recent guests on the
guest.
Maybe a theme here. Join the podcast. Jump straight to the top of the list. That's it. And have absolutely incredible seasons on top of that. Caglione has jumped from five to three. Then at number four is Wake Forest Nick Kurtz, first guy on this list who's fallen, but only two spots. Got off to a rough start. Been fantastic as of late. And Braden Montgomery jumped from 10 to 5. And today's podcast guest, Hagen Smith, jumped from 15 to 6. And then another pitcher, Chase Burns of Wake Forest, jumped from 16 to 7. J.J. Weatherholt was number one on the preseason list, hasn't played a whole lot, been dealing with injury, fell from 1 to 8. Connor Griffin, slight move from 8 to 9. And then a big jump into the top 10 for Harvard Westlake shortstop Bryce Rayner, jumped from 39 up to number 10. Guys, my first question about this top 10, was there any consideration for Bazzana or anyone else at number one, or was it at this point pretty much of a slam dunk?
It was more of a slam dunk, I think. I think your top three guys who have set themselves apart right now are Condon, Bazzana, and Caglione. And then, there's another guys who you just ticked off who are probably like a half tier behind them. But like, I asked Jonathan this question on last week's podcast, Jason, which I know you didn't listen to, so I'm going to pose it to you. I had a team official ask me that if we surveyed all 30 teams and asked them to identify the best player in the draft, how many teams do you think would say Charlie Condon? And I asked that question of another club official, but these teams pick fairly early in the draft. What do you think the first guy's answer was when I asked him, when he asked me, I gave him my answer. And then what do you think his answer was out of 30 teams? How many would have Charlie Condon number one?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, this was in your story that accompanied the top one.
That was the second quote. I quoted the second person.
Oh, okay.
The first person.
That one said 2/3. Yes. Is that what it was?
Yeah. Yes.
But the first one did not.
What? You don't know what the first one said. That's my question. So what do you think his number was?
I will say he said 27.
He said 24 or 25.
Okay. So I'll take that.
But yeah, I think the majority of teams would have Condon 1-1. When I was doing that overview story, I got a Wyatt Lankford, like a less athletic version, although he's not a bad athlete, of Wyatt Lankford. And then I think there'd be more debate over Bazzana versus Caglione.
Yeah.
Who would be two and who would be three?
We did, like, looking through the feedback, like, there were people who thought we had the right two, and one person even said you could go either way with Condon and Bazzana. But then there were some people who thought that Bazzana should go more, in Braden Montgomery range, like around five. And I think one of the things that's most exciting about this top, really, seven, I'll leave Weatherholt out of the equation for right now, just because he's kind of, I think, literally getting his legs back under him. But the top seven is, they're all performing very well right now. Like Kirsten, to me, Kirsten really dropped two spots. It's just that Bazzana and Caglione have been so good. And Kurtz got off to that little bit of a slow start, but like all five of those bats, and then Hagen Smith has been ridiculous, and Chase Burns has been very, very good. So probably tease this as we continue to go on the pod, but I'm working on our first mock draft, and people picking up at the top there, it's like, it's challenging, but it's kind of fun. This isn't, as ridiculous a top of the draft as last year, with the top five that we've talked about so much. But it's fun when the guys that you have to choose from are all performing well. It makes it, I think, more interesting for those who are trying to decide which of those guys to take with the top 10 pick.
Has anyone dropped, you said that Kurtz didn't really drop because of performance. He only dropped two spots. Was there anyone in the top 20 or so that has dropped due to performance?
Yeah, I think there's a couple guys. I don't know if you're talking preseason top 20 or current top 20. You mentioned Connor Griffin sliding a spot, and I actually think people like him more than they did coming into the year, and it was just some of the college guys moved ahead of him. But I think Siever King at Wake Forest, even though we still have him ranked 13th, down from 9, to me, and I think you're on board with this, Jonathan, I think there's a clear top 9 or 10 guys, and I think Treya Savage is the clear number 11. And after that, I think
depends on what flavor you like, yeah.
Yeah, if you're picking in the teens, and I've talked to a couple scout directors picking the teens, it's not easy because there's not obvious guys. But anyway, Siever King's moved down a little bit. He's he's played a bunch of different positions for Wake Forest, and he's been fine. He's playing third, which I don't think is his best profile position at the next level. But the issue with him is, while he's having a good, not great season, he's making contact. He swings and chases a lot, so he makes a lot of suboptimal contact. So I think he gets dinged a little bit for that. Tommy White of LSU, I think the stock is down a little bit. I still think he's underrated as a hitter. He got off to a slow start. He's back hitting for power. The batting average is coming up. He probably is a first base only. But I think he's been dinged a little bit. Just when you're a bat-only guy and you get off to a slow start, that's tough. And then I think, you know, Vance Honeycutt, who went from 6 to 23, his strikeout rate has jumped back up again. It's interesting. I think, and Jonathan, you're doing a mock, not that the mock is definitive. This is how it's happening 3 months from now. But I bet Vance Honeycutt comes in higher than 23 in your mock.
You are correct.
Because he has the best tools in the college class and probably the best tools in the draft outside of Connor Griffin. But his strikeout rate, his ping pong back up near 30%, and I think it's at 28% for his career. The kind of red line where teams get worried about contact rate for college hitters is about 18%. Anything over that gets kind of dangerous. And I don't have the data on this, but I'm going to say that anybody who strike out 28% of the time during his college career, it's probably not a long list of those guys who've gone on to be real successful big leaguers. And so teams are kind of both enthralled and scared by Vance Honeycutt at the same time. I think he'll go in the middle of the first round just because there's not a lot of obvious guys to take. But that would be the answer to your question. Those would be the three kind of highest ranked guys, I think, on our list whose stock has gone down, although not terribly, I don't think, in any case. Maybe more severely for Honeycutt, but I still think he's going to get drafted pretty good.
All right, well, we're going to talk to Arkansas lefty Hagen Smith here momentarily. Jim had a chance to catch up with him, but he and Chase Burns made similar jumps. Smith from 15 to 6, Burns from 16 to 7. Both have been outstanding. One left-hander, one right-hander. How much separates these two in your minds? I mean, apparently not very much at all.
We can only keep them one spot no matter where we have them on the list. I mean, they're both my guys, and Jonathan, you can weigh in too, but like, I think the different, you know what I mean? The difference between those two guys, I think, is Hagen Smith's left-handed. I think he's a little more athletic and has a better delivery. And even though he doesn't throw as hard as Chase Burns, I think between the command and the shape, and he's got plenty of velo too, the fastball is probably going to play a little bit better at the next level. So that would be what separates those guys. But I know there's teams that have Burns ahead of Smith as well.
Yeah, I think it's the left-handedness gives him an edge. I get the sense, a small sense, that, you know, there's less fear of reliever risk with him than there was with Chase Burns. I think Chase Burns has answered, you know, a lot of those questions with what he's done this year. And it's not like Hagen Smith has 3 years at Arkansas of, you know, throwing a ton of strikes and things like that. From what little I've sort of dug into this as I've worked on this first mock, that's the one thing that kind of separates the two of them out. Even if Chase Burns is like overall pure stuff might be better or a little more electric, there isn't as much confidence still. There's a lot more confidence than there was when we did the list in December about Chase Burns' ability to start. But I think there are still some people who are not 100% sure. And that may be the slight separator. But both have moved up. As we thought, you know, if especially when we were looking at Chase Burns, I think back in December, but in general, if there were some college arms who kind of posted every week and performed really well, they were going to float up because there aren't a lot of them in this class to consider, you know, in the top 10 or top 15 even. So that's why those guys moved up. I think that's why Yasavage has moved up as well.
Yeah, I don't know, like, for sure. Like, anecdotally, it seems like there's something up with either the bats or the balls or both at the college level. But another factor that all these guys, you know, not just at the top of our draft list, but there's a lot of college guys having monster seasons. I've had a number of scouts just bring up to me, there just aren't that many good college pitchers this year. I don't know if this is some kind of, you know, late effect from COVID and how pitchers were developed in 2020, 2021. I don't know, but I think Hagen Smith and Chase Burns being so spectacular, and Trey Yasavage has been pretty good too, overshadow how kind of in general the pitching class has been disappointed. Like, we don't have to get into the number of guys who gone, you know, like the Josh Hartles and the Thatcher Hurds and the Drew Bean. We have a bunch of guys we had ranked as first round picks who've gone in the other direction as well. You know, Ryan Prager's a guy who's stepped up at Texas A&M. But like, for the most part, like, we haven't had a lot of pitching injuries, but we haven't had a lot of guys take big steps forward. I think it's a very, I don't know, Jonathan, it's hard because Smith and Burns are so good, but I feel like it's maybe a 45-ish college pitching class, if 50's average.
Yeah, I'll go along with that. I mean, if you told me 40, if you wanted to be a little stingy, you could do that. So yeah, it's not super deep.
Jim, you mentioned pitching injuries, and I wanted to go back to the Hagen-Smith, Chase Burns comparison quickly. I was wondering how much of a factor, if at all, is it when a guy's sitting on one Tommy John already? Because, you know, you almost expect every pitcher to have Tommy John at some point in their careers. But when you have a guy like Hagen-Smith who's already had one, you know, the history of guys coming back from multiple Tommy John surgeries is not nearly as good as coming back from one. Is that a consideration for teams, or is that so far in the rearview mirror now? He's what, 5 years, four years removed maybe from that? Is it a consideration?
Yeah, I mean, I think you take it in, you're looking at the medical. You know, he's not having any issues now. I don't know what we feel like the expiration date is on Tommy John. You know, I think it's one of those things that you can, if you're in love with Hagen-Smith, you're like, it was 5 years ago. He's throwing well. He's already gotten it out of the way. And if you're less than Hagen-Smith, you're like, he had Tommy John. Like, is he going to need another one? I mean, it's a consideration, but it's kind of like there's a scout who both Jonathan and I love talking to, who one time asked me, like, how we handle prospects who've had Tommy John surgery, like, in terms of how we evaluate them. Like, do we act like they're going to bounce back and everything's going to be fine? Or do we act like, hey, things could go wrong in the future? And I said, you know, we still struggle with what we do with those. And I asked him how his team handles it. And he's like, it's kind of goofy. Like, we tend to assume our guys are all going to come back fine and discount everybody else's prospects because they know their guys best and they know what the rehab is and they believe in the makeup of the guys. So I don't know. I think it's a minor consideration, but I'll put it this way. It's not really coming up where anybody's like, I can't take Hagen-Smith in the top 5 or 10 picks because of it. So I don't think it's really much of a factor.
All right. Well, let's talk to Hagen-Smith. Jim had a chance to catch up with him. So we'll take a break and come back with that coming up next on the MLB Pipeline podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Jim Callis with the Pipeline Podcast, pleased to be joined by Hagen-Smith, left-hander from University of Arkansas, who not only is the best left-handed pitching prospect in this year's draft, I think he's probably the best pitching prospect in this year's draft. And so, Hagen, we're happy to have you join us. Thanks for making time for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So the first thing I got to ask you about, because I don't know if I've ever heard scouts talk as glowingly about one outing like they did about your outing against Oregon State. I'm sure you've been asked about it a lot. Second start of the season, six innings, the 17 strikeouts in six innings is pretty incredible, but I almost feel like 78 pitches to get that done is the more incredible number. I had numerous scouts tell me that's the best pitching performance they've ever scouted. Did you know that your how quickly did you realize that your stuff was at a different level that night? Have you ever had stuff that good before?
That was probably the best I've ever thrown before. I mean, I could tell in catch play before the game, I felt really good. And in my last pitch, my bullpen, I still feel like probably the hardest pitch I've ever thrown in my life. So, okay, well, I'm throwing hard today. So, hopefully Hopefully I did good, but yeah, I just felt really good that day.
What was it, the fastball that was really working for you, or was it the slider? I mean, I guess if you're that dominant, they both probably had to be on, right?
Yeah, it was a little bit of both. I think I threw a lot of fastballs beginning counts and then kind of ended with slider for the most part of the game. And then maybe later in the game, I threw a slider more just and then fastball later. I can't remember exactly.
I mean, not that you sit there and analyze your own accomplishments a lot, but what sticks out to you? 17 strikeouts in 6 innings or throwing 7 no-hitters as a high school senior in Texas? Not too definitely. Many. Only one other guy has done that in Texas.
Definitely strikeouts, especially because it's in college too. I mean, don't get me wrong, it was cool when I did that in high school, but I think it was definitely cooler to strike out 17.
And I think at one point when you struck out 7 no-hitters as a senior, you had 3 in a row, and then I think a 4th outing, and then threw another no-hitter. So you almost went 5 starts in a row without giving up a hit?
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right.
So, you know, early on in your career, I mean, I think even going back to maybe your freshman year, it was Bullard High School, right? Bullard in Texas? Yeah, at Bullard High School, scouts were projecting, okay, this guy's going to be one of the best high school lefties in the draft in 2021 when you're going to be eligible. But then you wound up hurting your elbow. I think you had Tommy John surgery in 2019 and missed your entire junior season. I know Tommy John surgery is commonplace, but how much of a shock is it when it happens to you? And were you ever concerned, geez, you know, you must have been, what, 15, 16 years old? You know, how easy is it going to be come back from this? What was it like going through that?
Yeah, I think I was 16 at the time when it happened. And leading up to the injury, I just played for fun. I mean, I think the biggest tournament I played in before, like getting attention, quote unquote, but like Oklahoma State, I think I went to like a tournament there or something I picked up with some team and I was just throwing. And then I got my first offer from them. So I guess that's when I kind of realized, like, yeah, maybe college is a good like option. Like maybe I'd go play in college. So, I mean, really not until then. I just played baseball for fun.
How hard was the rehabilitation process from Tommy John surgery?
Yeah, it was definitely tough. But, I mean, I think it helped me a lot, honestly, just like knowing that I have to do stuff to keep care of my body. And before that, I just kind of showed up and pitched. So just being able to do that rehab just kind of put in my mind that I got to work really hard for what I want to do.
And it seemed like your senior year, your stuff came back pretty quickly. I mean, you threw 7 no-hitters, so obviously something was working. But, like, I know from talking to people who've been through it, you know, it's a long process. You know, it seems like because it's so grueling, guys get stronger just, you know, going through the process. And there's always some trepidation, like, okay, now I'm back on the mound. Now I'm throwing. How quick did it take you to realize, okay, my stuff's come back. I'm going to be fine. Did it come back pretty quick?
Yeah, I think velocity came back quicker than stuff in general. I mean, I think in high school I was still trying to learn shapes of pitches, off-speed stuff. So, I mean, it's not like I was just kind of – I mean, it's not like I was throwing terrible off-speed or anything, but it was just – it kind of took me time to get my slider where I wanted to, or I think I threw a curveball in high school. So, I mean, it was just kind of day by day trying to figure out my off-speed, and then my fastball is kind of the same since then.
And from talking to teams back then, I mean, I think the general consensus was, okay, if you were signable, you might go around the 3rd round or so of the draft. Did you get a lot of interest from pro teams, or were you pretty determined you were going to go to Arkansas? Was it a tough decision?
I mean, yeah, I think for sure I was pretty set on going to college. I mean, if some offer that I couldn't resist happened, then I probably would have taken it in high school. But looking back on it, I'm super glad I came here. I mean, I was super underdeveloped in high school. And so now the 3 years are here in Arkansas, it's been awesome.
Well, and it seems like your stuff keeps getting better. I mean, you're having a spectacular season so far. You're, I think, leading the nation. You're averaging 17 strikeouts per 9 innings. You're leading the nation. Opponents are hitting 136 against you. I know I think Arkansas tweeted out a stat that you got your 100th strikeout the other day after 52 and 2/3 innings. And they're different levels, but the major league record's 61. So you're having a spectacular season. And just from looking at your stuff on video and trying to break it down, am I crazy or does it seem like your stuff keeps getting better? Like it's gotten better every year at Arkansas. It feels like your fastball and slider are up 2-3 miles an hour this year and you're commanding them better. I mean, I know you have a splitter that you don't use too much, but it seems like that's been more effective when you have used it. Do you feel like your stuff continues to get better?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my freshman year, I was an okay college pitcher. And then last year I was a little better, and this year has been pretty good so far. But I mean, I also added a cutter this year. I've been throwing a lot more It just, I mean, I feel like that's helped me a lot this year. Just get quick outs, get early ahead in the count.
What do you think your stuff could continue? It's already pretty good, but do you think it could continue? Is there another level? What are you working on right now? What are you trying to do to get better at this point?
Yeah, I think for right now during the season, I think it's just game by game, just try to be as sharp as you can, executing pitches. But definitely, I definitely think there's more to tank. I mean, Coach Bell, our strength coach here, we've been going after it. So I'm definitely going to come back in the offseason, try to see what else is in the tank.
What did you do to prepare for this season? Because whatever you did, it's obviously worked well.
Yeah, so after I came back from Team USA this summer, I think I went home for like a week or two, and then I came back up here and just started training with Coach Bell, like I said. I mean, we just kind of got after in the weight room, kind of learned my body, nutrition, just kind of everything under the sun.
You got to pitch in the College World Series in 2022. You know, last year, you guys got knocked out in regionals. As we record this, I think you guys are number two in the country behind Texas A&M, I think, in most of the polls. How would you compare this year's team to that College World Series team from 2 years ago in terms of strengths and weaknesses?
I think we're a lot better than that team. I feel like that team was just all right for the whole year. I know we had our glimpses of being really good, and then we got hot at the very end. We just hit. We just couldn't stop hitting, couldn't stop pitching at the end of the year in 22. And I feel like this year, it was just way more consistent, way more talent. So I think it's a really good team this year.
Yeah, I mean, the pitching staff's incredibly deep. I mean, you guys could be set up to make a nice run. I always like to ask guests when we get them on the podcast about guys they play with or against. And you faced, you know, there's a lot of top college hitters who are going to go at the very top of this draft. And you played with Charlie Condon. I think you pitched against him at Georgia. You played with Jack Caglione at USA Baseball. I don't think you've ever pitched against him necessarily in your, at least not in Arkansas, right?
Maybe,
I was looking. I couldn't find a Florida game.
22, maybe in Hoover.
Okay. Brayden Montgomery, you played with him on Team USA. You played with J.J. Weatherholt on Team USA. How would you stack those guys up? I'm going to make you pick one. Who would be? I don't think you've necessarily faced them all in games, but who do you think would be the toughest out at the plate?
Well, probably Charlie Condon. I mean, he hit a home run off me last year, pretty far. So probably him.
He's done that to a lot of people, though. Yeah, so, for sure. But what was it like being on Team USA? I mean, how much did that add? Do you think help? I mean, being around guys like that. I mean, not just on the hitting side, but also on the pitching side too.
Yeah, it was awesome. Just kind of being around everybody day by day, especially see the routine on game days and hanging out with all the pitchers and the pitching coach, just kind of learn to see what they do. I know me and Brandon Neely, we play catch a lot this summer, and Tyson Neighbors. So just kind of seeing what they do, play catch with them, talking with them about pitching. It was awesome to be there.
Yeah, and getting back to the SEC theme for a second, I admit I'm a little bit of an SEC homer because I was glad to hear you say Charlie Condon because I went to Georgia. I'm a Georgia grad. So I will endorse the Charlie Condon respect. But, you know, I do this podcast with Jason Ratliff and Jonathan Mayo, and they always give me a hard time because I'm always talking up the SEC. But how much does it help? I mean, the competition in that league, I think the last time I don't have the polls in front of me. I think at one point four of the top five teams in the country were SEC teams this year. And it's just year after year, and it's different programs winning the College World Series. How rugged is that competition, and how much do you think that's going to help prepare you for pro ball? Because there really aren't any easy weekends in the SEC.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, every single weekend, like you said, it's a grind. I mean, it's a gauntlet when you play in the SEC. There's no bad teams. I mean, LSU is a national champion this year, and they're having, I mean, a decent year this year, but they're still really capable of going really far. I mean, super, super talented. I mean, every team is talented. They get hot quick and be dangerous in the postseason.
I know the focus is obviously on the season because you guys are in the middle of it. As we talked about, you have a chance to go to Omaha, make a deep run, perhaps win national championship. How tough is it? How much attention do you pay to draft talk? How tough is it to try to ignore that? Are you aware of what people are saying about you? You know, hey, you could be the first pitcher taken. You could go in the top five. You could go in the top 10. How easy is it to block that out?
Yeah, I try to block it out. I mean, anytime I see something, if I see something like scrolling on social media, I'll just get off of it. I think if people get into that, it'll just get in their head at the end of the day, and you just try to focus on what's ahead of the season.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your time today, Hagen. I hope we get to see you guys in Omaha again. I know we're going to hear your name called pretty early on draft day, and looking forward to seeing what you do in your pro career. You've been a lot of fun watching you this season to keep up the good performance and the good work. And thanks again for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, well, thanks to Hagen Smith, and we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Jason Ratcliffe, Jim Cowell, Jonathan Mayo. Thanks very much to Hagen Smith for joining us. He has been outstanding. Jim, I did not realize this, probably in his blurb too, I bet. I'm calling myself out here, but did not know that he had thrown 7 no-hitters in high school. That's way more.
You should have known that, because that was in his high school blurb. That was in his high school blurb 3 years ago.
I've had years to know that.
That's right. You ignored his blurb in 2021, and you're ignoring it again in 2024.
All right. So,
but that consistency is what makes you great.
That's right. Thank you. So he made a jump, and we hinted at the fact that there were several guys who made big jumps onto the top 150 list, and we want to go over some of these guys, the highest risers, the biggest helium guys, as you like to say. So we'll break it down into two groups, guys who were already on the top 100 and made big jumps, and then guys who were not on the top 100. And I mean, I was very surprised to find that there were so many guys that are now in the top 50 that weren't even on the top 100 before. 8 of them jumped into the top 50 from completely off the list. Very interesting. And Jim, we were talking a little bit before the podcast, and you said that you think that's a pretty good sign of what's going on with this draft class.
Yeah, it's not, there's some really, you know, good college hitters who are performing very well at the top, and a couple college pitchers we mentioned, but it's not a particularly deep draft. It's not a particularly good draft compared to a typical draft. Like the high school crop, there aren't a lot of high school hitters. There's some high school pitchers, but that's actually the scariest demographic for most teams to take in the first round. And I mean, just to compare it to last year, which was a stronger draft and a deeper draft, I now have completed the research, Jason. Last year's top 50, how many? And Jonathan, you're. I'm giving you permission again, Jonathan. That's apparently what I've slipped into this mode.
Permission to speak.
Top 50 prospects last April, 2023. How many of them were newcomers who had not been ranked on the preseason top 100? Because this year there's 8, I believe.
Yeah,
right?
Eight.
I'll guess 3.
I'll take the over and say 4.
It is 3.
Wow.
Good guess. Ralphie Velasquez, Hunter Owen, and Colton Ledbetter were our 3 newcomers.
Thanks for nice job looking that up on the fly there, Jim. But it just struck me as that seemed like a very high number. I was very surprised to see that. So let's talk about some of these guys. But first, let's talk about the guys who were already on the list but made big jumps. And there are 3 of them that landed in the top 15, 4 of them that landed in the top 25, top 22, actually. Let's start with James Tibbs. James Tibbs of Florida State goes from 81 to 22. Tell us a little bit about Mr. Tibbs, Mr. Mayo.
They call him Mr. Tibbs. Very throwback movie reference right there.
We're all old. We're all old. That's really going to do well with the under 25 yes. demo of our podcast.
People aren't huge Sidney Poitier fans. Come on. So, you know, Tibbs is first and foremost a bat. And I think guys who can hit in big college programs who perform are going to float up. What he's done this year, though, has taken it to an entirely different level. He's hit, you know, he hit 300 with 10 homers his freshman year at Florida State. Then up that, he had an 1100 OPS as a sophomore. He hit on the Cape with some power. And then this year, he's got a 1300 OPS. He's already got 18 homers. I think, to me, the thing that stands out the most is he has twice as many walks as strikeouts so far. And, you know, his chance to be a plus hitter with at least average power. The one question is where he plays. You know, probably you're hoping he can play left field. He's not all that big. So first base, where he has played some, isn't, you know, where you would think he would go, although the offensive profile might fit there. But he has just been so good offensively. And, you know, teams have gone in to see both him and Cam Smith, who's also having a very good year. Cam Smith was ranked pretty high to begin with. And there are some people who like Tibbs more than Smith, although it's a bit of a split camp. And Tibbs has worked his way into not only high up in the rankings, but he's likely, I think, at this point to go probably somewhere in the middle of the first round.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jonathan, and you're doing the first mocks. You're talking to more teams about where he's going. I actually do think, you know, I talked about how after you get past number 11, I think it's wide open. If Tibbs went 12th, I just think the certainty of his bat is so high that you know he's going to hit, that if he went 12th or 13th, it would not shock. He could go 10 spots higher than where we absolutely have him ranked.
All right. The next biggest jumps on the list were Braylon Doty and Jacob Cozart, who jumped 52 and 41 spots respectively. But the next up was Billy Amick, who jumped 35 spots all the way up to number 15, Jim.
Yeah, and I think with Billy Amick, we knew that potential was there. People just wanted to see more of it. He's a son of the former NASCAR driver, Lyndon Amick. I don't know if you read my blurb and saw that, Jason, but there's a nugget for you. So he barely played as a freshman at Clemson, and he barely played in the first month of last season at Clemson. He just could not get on the field. I think Clemson wanted to play first base. He wanted to play third base. He was not getting at-bats. And then crazy how he got started. So Caden Grice, who was a draft pick last year, I think got ejected for challenging balls and strikes, like, I don't know, weekend game, like on a Saturday game. So he automatic one-game suspension. They need to replace him in the lineup. Billy Amick's in the lineup on the Sunday. And I think he had something like four hits. And then he hit 413 the whole rest of the season and continued to rake in the Cape Cod League. So he wasn't happy he was DHing playing first base at Clemson, so he transferred to Tennessee. And so guys thought he had a chance to be one of the best bats in this class. They just wanted to see more of it. And they've seen it this spring. He's hitting 350. His numbers have actually gone down a little bit since he actually had appendicitis and had to, you know, have surgery and miss some time. But he still has an ops over 1,200. He's hit 16 homers. Tennessee's probably got the deepest lineup in the country. I think they've got five guys who could go in the first two rounds of this draft. And he's actually improved a little bit at third base. He hadn't played much third base at all. And I think guys are now convinced that, while, you know, he's not going to be a gold glover, that, yeah, he can play third base. He can play third base well enough to stick there. So he's shown the bat is for real. He's shown he can play third base, which is what people wanted to see. And that's why he's jumped up. And he probably goes somewhere in the middle of the first round also.
Next two biggest jumpers on the new top 150 draft prospects list, Dante Norrie jumped 34 spots to number 49, Boston Bateman 32 spots to number 44. But a guy we want to talk about who has established himself as perhaps the top high school bat in the class, right up there with Connor Griffin. But Connor Griffin was already number 8 going into in our preseason list. But Bryce Rayner, Jonathan, someone you had a chance to see at the National High School Invitational.
Yeah, and he performed very, very well there. And you can look back over the years. He was already moving very rapidly up lists. and then kind of cemented that helium, mixing my metaphors so they don't make sense anymore. But he, you know, guys who perform well at NHSI tend to do well in the draft. And he was already moving up, and he was the best player there. He can really, really hit. He went from a guy, you know, when looking at his report in December, there were some intriguing things with the bat, some power potential, some questions about the hit tool. He's a two-way guy who pitches in relief at Harvard Westlake, but there were some people who were thinking, oh, if he gets a chance to start, maybe I'd like him and his athleticism on the mound more. And then he showed up, you know, in the spring. He was like a man amongst the boys at NHSI. He looks the part, kind of big, physical, athletic, left-handed hitting shortstop. I think he has every chance to play short. So he's going to get the Corey Seager, and then for the prospect hounds, the Colson Montgomery kind of comps, and he's living up to them. And yeah, depending on who you talk to, you know, Griffin has the better all-around tool set, but there are teams who might like Rainer more just because there's more certainty in the hit tool. And that, you know, that might matter to some teams. And he has worked his way very much into the top 10 conversation, you know, for this year's class.
But wait a second. He's going to be 19 years old, Jim.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Can't draft those guys. No. Can't draft those guys. I won't get on the soapbox here. The podcast is already going long. I don't want to go on a 10-minute rant about how age is overrated. We're going to ignore that. I'll just say Bobby Witt Jr. and we can move on. So,
Next guy on the list, another big jumper, Trey Yesavage, East Carolina right-hander, jumped from 36 to 11.
Yeah, and I think that's a testament to both the season he's having and the fact that other guys have faltered and he's just jumped a bunch of college pitchers. I mean, obviously talented. We ranked him pretty high coming into the season. He reliever's a freshman, starter East Carolina last year, was second team All-American, pitched well with the U.S. Collegiate National Team, and he's just been better this spring. Like he's got four pitches that are all solid or better. His mid-80s slider cutter is probably his best pitch. He's got a 93, 98 mile an hour fastball that doesn't have a ton of life, but has really good carry from a high arm slot. He's got a spike curveball. He's got a splitter. He misses bats with all four pitches. Improved fastball command this year. You know, his heater, because it doesn't have a lot of life in the past, would get hit at times if he didn't locate it well. He's doing a better job of that. You know, the reason we didn't have him as a first rounder coming into the year with all that stuff, and the stuff has ticked up maybe a little bit, but it's pretty much the same stuff he had last year, is he's more physical than athletic. There's some effort in his delivery. He does throw strikes. So it's not like the cleanest operation, but just with the way he's dominated and in this pitching class, to me, he was a pretty easy number 11, Jonathan, when we were doing the list. And after that, I think we could argue about 10 or 15 guys to put number 12 on the list.
Okay. So that's a look at the biggest risers who were already on the top 100 list and made jumps in this new top 150. Now we're going to talk about the highest ranked newcomers. And these are some guys who made some serious, serious jumps. First round consideration for all these guys we're going to discuss. Is that fair?
Yes.
They rank 26, 27, 30, and 41, the four guys that we're going to talk about here. Starting with Theo Gillen, we talked about Bryce Rainer from Harvard Westlake in California. Now Theo Gillen from non-Harvard Westlake in Texas. And Jim, a nice Kelly Gruber reference in your blurb here.
You're trying to act like you've read all my blurbs.
Yeah, now I'm reading them all.
He's going to be the first rounder, probably, from Westlake High in Austin since Kelly Gruber in 1980. So it's been a while. And, you know, he's interesting. He's one of those guys who emerged very early. You know, when he was a freshman, you know, scouts were saying this guy's going to be one of the top high school players in Texas in 2024 for the draft. And then he tore a labrum in his shoulder and had surgery as a sophomore, had knee injury as a junior. Arm hadn't come all the way back. He wasn't 100% coming back from the knee. He wasn't as dynamic as he had looked in the past on the showcase circuit last summer. So that's why we didn't rank him coming in. And he's looked healthier this spring. You know, and what's interesting is you have some scouts, like directors, national cross checkers, who think he might have the best high school bat in this draft. It's good approach, quick hands, nice swing. You know, I don't think he's going to be a big slugger, but he's one of those guys where he has plus raw power and his hitting ability is so good, he's going to get to most of it. So I think we're talking 20, maybe even 25 homers. You know, he's got more room to add strength. The position's a question on him. He's still not throwing great. I don't think he throws well enough to play shortstop. You get, it's weird. I get run times anywhere from like 55 to 65 or 70 on him. Could be an offensive second baseman, could be a center fielder. Worst case is if he winds up in left field, because let's say he doesn't have the instincts to play center and he doesn't have the arm to play in the infield, I think he's still going to hit enough. So his bat has been a very pleasant development on the high school side of things in a not very strong high school class this year.
All right, so he's at number 26, Theo Gillen, and one spot behind him at number 27, another guy who was not on the top 100 list to start the season, lefty Cash Mayfield. Cash with a K.
He's going to get some cash money in July because he's had a great spring. A terrible joke, I know. the reason he got overlooked, so he was Gatorade's Oklahoma High School Player of the Year last year as a junior, but he was worked very hard in the state playoffs. His team, Elk City, went to Oklahoma 4A state semifinals. And so he took the summer off because he'd just been kind of worn out. So people knew who he was, but you didn't see him on the showcase circuit. And then kind of got going. He went to the Super 60 Pro Showcase in February, looked really good there, touched 96 miles an hour in his first game, and he just never let up. He's been 92, 95, touching 97 with good life all spring. Last year, he was upper 80s, last time people had seen him. Already had an advanced changeup that tumbles at the plate. He's got a kind of a slurvy breaking ball that he needs better shape, but he locates it well. Got a really nice delivery, great extension. Stuff plays up. He's another old guy. You know, if teams aren't on that, he'll be 19 years and 5 months on draft day. But he's a lefty with really good feel, really good stuff. We'll see. I mean, I think he'll get paid as one of the top 30 players in the draft. The high school pitchers, a lot of times, teams feel better over paying him over slot with their second pick rather than taking him in the first round. But I do believe he's a first round talent.
I will say that we have a little run on Jim's guys here that in my work on the mock, you know, as Jim was pointing out, the top 11 was pretty straight and easy. And the mock, it doesn't follow like chalk, like just 1 through 11 ranking. But I do think that there are teams in that middle of the first round after you get past the 11 that are looking more seriously at some of those high school arms, like Cash Mayfield, like Cam Caminiti, who's already highly ranked, more than they might have in other years. Teams that don't necessarily look at that demographic are kind of looking at it.
All right, well, Jonathan, next up among the highest-ranked newcomers on the top 150 draft prospects list is a high school bat in your neck of the draft, in Kellen Lindsay from Hardy High School in Florida.
Yeah, he's really interesting because he plays at a really small school, not against a lot of good competition, wasn't seen on the summer showcase circuit because he was hurt. He had been a former multi-sport guy, had been the quarterback for his high school team, now is only playing baseball. Teams that seem to really know him, like Gary Sessler and him, think he's taken a big step forward because of that. He is a premium athlete, almost top of the scale runner. They think he's got a chance to play short, but, you know, probably could move him to second or center field if you wanted him to. It's all going to be a question of how much impact he's going to have. I don't think he doesn't have to be a pure power guy because of the other tools, you know, especially the speed, but he can't just hit ground balls to short and beat them out, which, you know, a lot of guys against bad competition in high school can do. Some scouts have seen it, other scouts have not, but his name is floating up, and it wouldn't surprise me if he goes a touch higher than where we have him currently ranked.
All right, and then the last guy we want to talk about is, it's fair to say, one of the more famous names in this year's draft class. Famous, but one that hardly anyone can pronounce, in my experience, Gerangelo Cinque, who is a switch pitcher from Curaçao. He played on Curaçao's Little League World Series team back in 2016. I mean, the name's been around for a while. We saw him, you know, he got a lot of attention coming out of high school. What was it, Jim? Did we see him at the combine?
He was at the draft combine. Yeah, he didn't play. He wasn't in the workout portion that was televised, but he was in a game. they play any number of high school games. They're down to one now, but they played two high school games when he was a senior in 2022. And he switched pitched. Did I say it right? He switched pitched in the high school game, in one of the high school games. And so he was a very easy feature to do for me. You know, we do a game feature, and it actually, I think, blew up on our site because everybody loves a good switch pitcher, and he's a legitimate switch pitcher. He's a legitimate switch pitching prospect rather than just kind of like a sideshow or a curiosity. But it's interesting. He is better right-handed. Like a right-hander, he's not a real big guy. He's 5'11", 200. As a right-hander, he gets some Marcus Stroman comps. He's 94, 96, up to 98 with carry. He's got a mid-80s slider that hits 91 with really nice depth. And he's got a upper 80s changeup with fade. And all those pitches work. As a lefty, he uses a lower slot. It's a low 90s fastball that doesn't miss a ton of bats. His money pitch from the left side is a sweepier, low 80s breaking ball that's got more horizontal than vertical action. And it's interesting. He's not just going right on right, left on left. Many scouts would like to see him become a full-time right-handed pitcher, but he will pitch right-handed to some lefties if the lefties don't have a pronounced split, a difference, you know, and how they perform against both sides pitching. It'll be interesting to see what goes forward because, you know, as a righty, the way it gets broken down to me is as a righty, he's a legitimate starting pitching prospect. He could go in the first round. As a lefty, you know, probably a big leaguer, but it would be a lefty reliever. And, you know, having to prepare both arms and train both sides, you could argue detracts from gains he can make if he just focused on one. It wouldn't be nearly as interesting as a story. But he had a rough year as a freshman last year on a bad Mississippi State team. This year he's been really, really good. And even though we have him ranked 41st, again, we're not going to see all the high school pitchers we have ranked in the first round going in the first round. If he continues to pitch like he has, I could see him pushing his way into the first round.
All right, so there we have four of the biggest risers that were not on the top 100, were on the top 100 and made big jumps in this top 150. Our mailbag question to wrap things up today is also draft related. Comes from Tom Hicks.
Rangers owner? Is that the Rangers owner? Listening to the podcast?
Neither confirm nor deny.
But Tom Hicks asks, do the Guardians take C. Condon? I have to assume he's talking about Charlie Condon.
That's Carl Condon, his twin brother. But Jonathan, you're working on the mock, so tease the mock, and you can go first.
Have the Guardians confirmed their pick to you?
Yes, it's locked in stone. You know, we don't have to worry about this one for the rest of the way. I, you know, without giving away the top of my mock draft, I think they do. You know, obviously there are other things that can come into play. Jim, as you know, when you start working on those mocks, even this early on, you will hear from teams lower down saying that there are rumors that the team picking at the top is going to have some, you know, has some money saving scheme that they're going to take someone that shouldn't
don't
go
get by me the started.
Third. Both Jason and I are just trying to poke the callous bear as much as possible. And one, I'm going to discount that, especially now. Like no one knows that now. And two, you know, there's so many reasons why stuff like that comes out, and there's posturing and things like that. But to me, Condon is the best player. You know, I think that some of these other college bats who have performed well, you could make an argument for. I think the Guardians have too many Travis Bazzana type players, although I think he's very, very good. I just think that a guy like Condon, not that you draft at 1-1 based on what you already have in your organization, but they don't have anything like that in their organization, or there is at least a severe lack of that. So to me, yes, I do think that he is, as of this moment, the guy the Guardians take. Jim, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd agree with that also. Like you said, you can make an argument that Bazzana is a better pure hitter. You can make an argument that Caglione hits left-handed and Condon hits right-handed. I still think he is the best combination of power and contact and plate discipline of this group. I think he's a better athlete, and I think people realize it than he got credit for coming into the year after playing mostly first base last year. Yeah, I think he'd be the obvious guy as of right now to go 1-1. And I think wherever he goes in the draft, I think there's a good chance. I'm not saying he's going to make the opening day roster next year, but I do think he might be on that Wyatt Langford path where he gets the opportunity to move very, very quickly.
And by the way, like you'd normally like, oh, left-handed, that would be an advantage. The Guardians have so many left-handed hitters that having a right-handed guy with power it would be welcomed, I would imagine. Like it's kind of flipping the script a little bit. So, you know, the fact that someone offers left-handed power may not be an advantage from what the Guardians are trying to figure out.
He would, and again, like you said, you don't draft for need, but they could use some power, especially in their outfield, and he'd be such an obvious fit for them. So I just think it makes a lot of sense. But, you know, the fun thing is, I mean, I haven't calculated how many podcasts we have until the draft, but it's probably, what, 12, 14, 15? I mean, a lot can change between now and mid-July.
All right. Thanks to Tom Hicks for that question. Thanks to Hagen Smith for joining us on the show today. And Jonathan, I was not here with you guys last week. Did not have a chance to publicly congratulate you on your 25th anniversary of Major League Baseball.
Stop it! We did that last week. Thank you very much.
Well, I didn't. I didn't get a chance.
Well, you did in person, and it meant the world to me. Thank you.
All right, and thanks to everybody for listening. That's going to do it for this week's episode of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, so you don't miss an episode. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.